Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Thank you for joining us. We're so happy you're with us. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And we're going to do some unenslaving this morning on all things economic. And, the other night, Don Bongino, he was talking about, if I was going to try to harm a country, I'd do exactly what Biden's doing. And he really implied that it's intentional. Whether it's intentional or not is irrelevant. What's relevant is that you know what to do. And you know what is going on exactly. And our guest, Robert Kudla from Trade Genius, is going to tell you exactly what is happening to this economy and precisely what are some options that you're facing. And this is stuff that hasn't hit the mainstream media. I think at some point it will, but they tend to lag 2 to 4 weeks behind what we talk about on this show. And I'm not bragging, I'm just saying that's the way it's been. Bob, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Hey Dave, thanks for having me.
Well, I have said it from the beginning of this administration. If the intent of this administration is not to destroy the country, they're sure doing a good imitation of it. They made us energy dependent when we're independent. Now that Afghanistan has fallen, you have Chinese coming into the country. They could easily spread into Iran, their ally from the BRICS nations days, and threaten Middle East oil supplies. So we're threatened with our oil here. We're threatened with our oil there. And that's a huge economic blow. We have lost energy jobs. The capital gains tax. I could go on and on. In other words, everything that's being done is not for Americans, it's to Americans. And it's resulted in some really bad spin-off situations here. And so tell me what we should really be most concerned about today with the spin-offs from the bad decision-making coming out of this administration.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, we don't have to, reinvent the wheel here. Just about every policy initiative that the Biden administration has undertaken, either through neglect, malfeasance, or it's a feature, has strategically harmed the United States.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that many people are not really starting to talk about, but I think is going to happen really soon, is that, you know, you and I both talked about the expense of trying to ship goods across, you know, the from China to the U.S. and elsewhere, is that those supply chains now are getting to be even more fragile. So there's a lot of reports this weekend, I think it's starting to get visibility now, that in Hawaii, you know, obviously they depend on everything. I think 80% of what you can see there is produced elsewhere. And they've now are at a worse condition than they were when COVID first broke. Now that's an island where people can literally, I wouldn't be surprised in the next 6 to 9 months that the United States will have to declare some sort of maritime emergency for Hawaii and deploy naval assets to move goods in and out of that state. You know, it's a big military base, and I wouldn't be surprised if it totally disrupts tourism over there. That's number one. Number two is supply chain into the U.S. It's getting to the point of ridiculousness. You know, you're looking at some of these lag times now are now going over a year, some places 2 years to get parts. China keeps shutting down different ports, you know, quote unquote, for COVID. And then the United States, the Long Beach, which is the main port of entry, has 40 ships. I just flew in from Seattle last week. And as I was coming into land, I was showing my wife, I said, take a look at this. And we were flying in Orange County. I said, look at all the boats sitting outside of Long Beach. Usually they have one, max two ships waiting to offload. They got over 40 ships out there waiting to offload. And now you have container rates at $24,000, where it used to be $1,000 per container to go across the Pacific. So we haven't even begun to see the implications of the inflation that's going to come from that. But more importantly, you and I talked about this before. I'm still in my camp of inflationary depression, which means you have rising prices, but people's ability to pay for them are vastly diminished, so you have lower sales units. So you get the worst of all worlds, right? You have high prices, but the retailers can't make money because they're sitting on too high fixed costs. The consumer's not happy because they can't afford the goods. So nobody's happy in this situation, and that typically leads to then a real deflation and a real depression because, you know, basically, well, I would call it debt liquidation. How's that? Which is a depression and then
yeah. World.
So that's what I still see on tap. So think about this for a second. I use the example, there's bike parks, right? They're now 26-month delay of getting bike parks. So let's say you own a bike shop, right? So you're not getting the parts, but what you have, you jam the price up on, right? Everybody looks at this, oh, I can't afford it, so I'm just gonna put my bike in the garage. Well, the bike owner's sitting there, okay, I can't sell any goods, but I gotta make rent, I gotta make payroll, I gotta pay for this, I gotta pay for that. Well, next thing you know, he's gone, right? So that's what we're going to start seeing. You know, we're going to probably see a surge of more bankruptcies at the retail level because of the inability to get goods and services. And it's not just things going across the sea. I read also yesterday that even foodstuffs that are produced in the United States and consumed in the United States is having supply chain issues as well. So even goods that are created in the U.S., they can't get the goods to the market for one way, shape, or form. And I don't know, I'm a little distrustful as to why, but it doesn't matter. If they can't get it in, they raise the prices of the goods. And then what's happening if people aren't buying it? If you go to the grocery store, look at what gets, when you go Tuesday, look what's on sale, hard sales and stuff. You know, stuff that you think should be higher prices, well, the prices rise, people can't afford it. So then the retailers have to slash mark down this stuff to get it off the shelf because more goods are coming in. And you can see that even they can't really deal with it very well either. So that's kind of my theme going forward, is that we're going to have less goods and they're going to be at a higher cost, but nobody's going to be happy.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. And with regard to the supply chain, I've been reading about it from the Chinese perspective. You know, they're in lockdown now. And they still have massive flooding going on, but I was reading about their number three port has now been closed, and only one and two are open, and they're deflecting ships away from that port, and this is the article I was reading, to a major port, more major port, but the major port's having tremendous backlogs. So the backlogs of shipping just aren't like in the port of Los Angeles or Long Beach port. It's all through China, and they can't get the stuff out. And that's going to create major problems for us because we get a lot of our medications from there. I was reading 97% of our antibiotics come from China. And then you talked about the foodstuffs. You're absolutely right. That's going to create problems in the grocery store. So from the Chinese perspective, and this is terrible. And so I don't have an answer to this question, so I'm going to ask you, and I don't know if there is an answer. But from the time the Chinese decide it's time to reopen again to full commerce, in full trading in their ports, how long would it take to get them up to par? I can't imagine they open on Monday for full trading and Tuesday everything is fine.
Yeah, so, you know, if you are a retailer and you want to get a good from China to the U.S., your lead time is 4 months. Okay, that's assuming you place the order and it ships. 6 months if you have to get a design approved that they're, you know, their local engineers to design, you know, do the design and the casting and all that stuff.
Oh my gosh.
So that's 6 months. And then you have to then add on that we're probably a 4 month to 6 month lag in shipping. So if everybody tomorrow decides that we're back to normal, we're looking for at least minimum of 1 year.
Ooh.
Now there's good news, bad news, right? So the good news is necessity is the mother of invention. So I have a lot of clients that are from former communist countries, and they're quite calm about all this. And so we were talking actually this morning. So you guys are from Poland and from Germany that grew up under communism, and they basically said what you're going to see happen is that in communist Poland, we never had anything. And so it's just mother of invention. And he said all of a sudden, machine shops would just show up. You know, and I think we're going to start seeing, I think we're going to see a revolution in what I call what's called mass customization, where you have the ability now to 3D print metals and things of that nature, and you're going to start seeing supply chains drift back into the United States. Now, that might be all part of the scene here, Dave. One thing I was thinking about this morning is that nobody wants to confront China directly, right? So if you want to be passive aggressive, what do? You make Chinese goods unacceptable in terms of price and timing, and you force these corporations to onshore to be able to provide services and products to their clients.
You mean Donald Trump's going to be president again?
He started it.
I know he did.
And so I think that might be one of the things that come from this, that look, hey, I can't wait 2 years for parts. You know, I don't care if China's 30% cheaper. 30% of zero is zero, right? So I think you may start seeing people decide to. But that takes time, too, because the Chinese not only own the manufacturing, but as you talked about with the pharmaceuticals, they also own a lot of the precursors. So the whole supply chain has to be rejiggered, and that could take, 3 to 5 years. But we're also talking about Taiwan. So the Chinese have changed their tack. Last time you and I talked, we're like, there's no way the Chinese can do an invasion because, it would just be pariahic for them. So now what you're hearing from the Chinese, and it started last week, is that we'll just do a pinpoint surgical strike to cripple Taiwan's ability to repel us in the future. And so,
What would that look like?
Well, I what they're trying to say is that they could take out their strategic assets,
like their ports.
Not their ports so much as their missile defense systems.
Okay, all right.
Their counterstrike systems. So, probably good luck. I mean, I doubt it because of the mountains in Taiwan. You couldn't even get your missiles into some of those places. But they, that's what they're talking about now. And so, if I was China and I was a nationalist and I didn't really care about global trade, I would be pumping missiles into Taiwan Semiconductor, right? Their manufacturing plants, and cripple the whole world, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that is something that, you just want to grab the people in Washington and shake them by the head and say, what were you guys thinking? You make us dependent on pharmaceuticals, you make us dependent on semiconductor chips, and you put us in the most vulnerable parts of the world. And then, you're talking about the Green New Deal, right? Of course, everybody in electric cars. Who's the only country that makes batteries en masse? China. So our elites still haven't quit on the notion of enslaving us to the Chinese. But just some interesting things I thought that I share. That's the areas that I'm watching. And you and I, we don't have to talk politics. I think it's clear that I'd be surprised that Joe's still our beloved leader by Thanksgiving. I think the knives are now out on him.
I think the conditions are out on him. Listen, we all are going to come to our end of days. And I'll say this, my background, I was a trained and licensed mental health therapist at one time. And my judgment of him from repetitive observation is he's in severe cognitive decline. Not partial, severe. Which will soon make him unable to perform daily tasks.
Yeah, and look, he's 78 years old, and so it's really unfair for him and his family. He doesn't even know he doesn't know.
He doesn't. And his wife's trying to protect him. Listen, I don't criticize him for this. This is not his fault. This comes to all of us, and we often don't have the self-awareness to judge when it's time to pull our own plug. But as my wife was saying last night, you think the First Lady would start to say, Joe, I think it's time to step aside. But the regime will still stay the same. Regardless of what happens with Biden, you've got Harris sitting in the wings, and she hasn't done anything to be impeached for yet.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. I agree with you totally. And the thing is that, Joe had, regardless of anything, Joe is a likable guy for the people on the Democratic side. People like Joe.
Yeah.
He's kind of every man.
Good old boy, yeah. Good guy to have a beer with.
Right. He took the train. He was a joker and smoker, you know, glad hander. The African-American community trusted him. Okay. Now Kamala comes in, there's no trust. And she's not strong. And she doesn't bring, and we probably talked about this before, she doesn't have her own infrastructure. See, she's going to suffer from the same things Trump did. Okay. But she's weak and Trump was strong. So she's going to get in there and you're going to have the Bidens. I mean, the Biden, you're going to have the Clintons. You're going to have the neocons. You're going to have the Obamas. All their people are going to be vying for influence, or all of them are going to be vying for influence or trying to roll her when she gets in. And I think it's going to be just another disaster. Now, look, politically, I'm glad because I think it's going to help, you know, my side of the politics. But in the meantime, it could be really ugly, and I'm not sure, too sure. I don't know if we'll enjoy the ride till we get there.
Yeah. I shudder. What I read about her vice presidency is it's nothing but chaos. People are working in fear. There is mistrust, and there's a lot of infighting. And I've been reading, and this isn't conservative accounts. This is general news accounts, that she can't manage her own office. And if you expand that on a macro level to the presidency, we could have extreme leadership chaos.
Yeah. I mean, look, she's not... Look, what'd she have, 2% of the vote?
Well, when she... Yeah, in the primary, she had the most money and the least amount of votes.
Yeah, she has no... She has no coattails. But anyway, from that standpoint, though, I think that this is the reason why the Federal Reserve won't taper. Okay, you hear all this taper talk. Taper. You know, and... They do that because they don't want the stock market to actually go absolutely ballistic, you know, go full Zimbabwe, right? So they keep trying to do these things to keep people at bay. But look, you know, gold, oil, and Bitcoin, I call it the GOB index, you know, they all popped over the weekend. And so, you know, Bitcoin tells us that people don't trust the banking system, okay? You know, gold tells us, you know, we don't trust the monetary system. And, you know, oil tells us that big money needs to hide out to protect themselves from inflation. And so when all three of those go up together, you know, it's basically indicating that we're going to, the deflationary mindset is gone again, and we're back into inflationary thinking. At some point, it screws up the indexes, but if the Fed just keeps buying the market like they do, right, through BlackRock, is that you can see the stock market going up, and at the same time, your ability to afford anything is going to be severely hampered. You know, they're basically forcing everybody into the stock market in order to be able to stay alive.
Yeah, that's... let me ask you this question, though. Going forward, can the stock market with this kind of volatility still be dependable for an average investor, not the top five?
Yeah, you know, remember there's a stock market, there's a market of stocks. So, you know, the index is kind of like, you know, kind of keeping the general score, but underneath it, there's a lot of opportunity and pitfalls at the same time. And so what you have to look for is, you know, basically underneath the surface, what is churning higher? And so there's always opportunities there. In fact, right now as we're talking, I'm looking at a stock that I'm going to recommend, and you know, it's $1.21. Well, you could buy 1,000 shares of that, and if it does what I think it's going to do, you're going to make 20% on the money in the next 2 weeks on it, and you know, rinse and repeat. You just keep finding these opportunities and you keep trading them. And so That's how the average person can, you know, make money in the market. And even if you professionally manage your money through a broker, you know, you need to be informed so you can go to your advisor and say, why aren't we in more energy names? Why are we in these names that seem to be topping out? So you can actually challenge the status quo. Look, they don't want you to bother them because they have these passive index funds that are just generic. And they go great until they don't, then they collapse. And so you need to be an informed investor. You know, somebody, the money's still yours, it's not theirs, so you need to take responsibility for it. Or what a lot of people do that are subscribers of ours, they do both. They have money professionally managed, and they have some that they trade, you know, or they're trying to generate income, or they retired and they have a stash that they want to put to work. For those people, you're absolutely the opportunity for some people. You know, you can run ahead of the steamroller all day long.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I thought, because even in extreme volatility, there's still the cracks of opportunity. I agree with you. I want to ask just a general hypothetical question here based on what you've already presented. I know we're going to talk about Venezuela, but before we go there, let's talk about China again. You were talking about 1 year effect on supply, getting that straightened out, and the spinoff events could maybe even go 3 to 5 years. If you were a banker, a huge businessman, financier, and you really wanted the concept of globalism to come together, and you wanted to start to put the currencies under one house, you know, like they talk about the Great Reset with digital currency for all, doesn't the retarding of China's economic progress slow this process down?
You know, I would actually argue that it's the opposite. They need
really
to cripple China, because look, China is not going to play ball, right? They're the middle kingdom. They're the center of the universe. You think the Chinese are going to, for 1 minute, adopt a one world currency that's not out of Beijing? I don't think so. And so I just think that we'll still be probably multipolarity, if you will. Look, all this stuff's being driven out of Europe, as you know, Dave. You know, they're still pissed that America got out from underneath their grip.
Yes.
And so they've been trying to pull us back for 300 years. And so, you know, they want to run this thing out of Basel, Switzerland. And I think you know, the Chinese for sure are a problem for them, and you know, Russia for a lesser extent, and probably the Middle East for even a lesser extent. So I think, and then there's America. So I think, you know, I think their plan is, if they could cripple China, right, make China play ball, right, just like the opium wars of the end of the 19th century, you know, and Middle East, they know they can do whatever they want there anytime they really want. And America, I think America the elites are a willing participant. How's that? And so that's my view on it. I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree that, you know, it's a kumbaya, let's all get together, one world thing. But the more I'm thinking about it, is that the less I think, why would China play ball? And Xi is getting more and more and more nationalistic as we go. So maybe he's feeling the pressure from this, and this is how he's reacting to it.
But interesting.
I'm happy to be wrong, but that's just my honest assessment.
I had an ex-Pentagon guy tell me this is how he saw it. Russia, they're arming like crazy to protect themselves, but they really want to go isolationist, and China still has expansionist dreams. And he said they're going in opposite directions with their foreign policy. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. So I think but you know, I think America and China, I think they're both having the same conversations internally, or I should say internal civil wars. So I think there's a side inside China saying we need to go back, become the middle kingdom again, and close ourselves off from the world. And at the same time, people are saying we need to develop the Belt and Road, and we need to have economic partners, i.e. like we did under the dynasties that you know, we're working under with Marco Polo, right? And America's having the same argument, saying, hey, we have two oceans, why should we, let's just detach from the world, the world's going to come to us, we can't feed themselves. And there's other people saying that, you know, the American exceptionalism thing is a racist notion and colonial notion, and we need to be absorbed into the greater good of the Bork.
Wow, those are some pretty heavy media references there, though, but that makes it understandable. And I hear what you're saying. The trend, though, with business, and I'm going to go back, I'm going to use this as an example. The best thing Trump did, and he doesn't get any credit for this, is when he came into office, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that was passed without Congress being allowed to read it. I mean, not allowed to, which is just incredulous. Basically created, I forget how many people, let's say 23-person council that could have rejected everything the U.S. government did, whether it was a Supreme Court ruling, a congressional law. If it conflicted with business interests, it basically subverted the Constitution. And Trump came in and said, I don't think so, and canceled it. I mean, he flat destroyed it. But the point I'm making here, though, is this. The TPP, to me, exposed the agenda that that business, big business, really big business, wants to go in the direction of the 1975 movie Rollerball, where there are no nation states and six corporations rule the world. Now, that was the movie theme, and of course how it could look in the modern day would be different, but I think the concept is the same. Have you ever given that any thought, that the TPP exposed corporate rule over America and ultimately the planet?
Yeah, no, and I love your analogy. I think it's that dystopian movie set has been it's been out there now for the last 50 years, and I think it's apropos. Look, we got six social media tech giants that are running the world right now.
So, that's right, exactly.
So I don't think we're too far off, and they got the whole world to take a shot, right? So so the TPP got blown up, but they just pivoted and just basically subsumed the United States, destroyed Trump, and got their clown in there to do what they want to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm afraid your analysis is correct. Okay, so anything else about China that we really need to look at here in terms of economic influence on the United States and our well-being?
Yeah, nothing new. I think they're still doing their soft campaign, which is working effectively. At the same time, they're running in their own quicksand. So I don't know who falls first. I don't know if the Chinese can get America to make a tragic strategic error beyond what we did in Kabul, or the Chinese kind of drown in their own inability to feed and to employ their people.
Have you looked at the possible long-range implications of the effect on the market spinning out of this terrible Afghan policy that we've had?
Yeah, I think it's a seminal event, Dave. I think that we're going to look back on this as and I'm not, I don't think I can overplay this, is that I think this is going to go in the same conversation as the fall of Saigon, the Bay of Pigs, the Iran hostage, situation. And even to the extent of looking at even what happened in Pearl Harbor, it's a seminal event that has I think major implications on the influence of the United States. And look, we already have repercussions from that. OPEC told Biden to pound sand on producing more oil.
Yeah.
The Russians and the Central Asian Republic said pound sand on long-term basing in their countries. The Chinese are absolutely trolling us, and I think that's going to be a problem, and I think it's going to get worse. Even Europe said this is a catastrophe. We're going to if it forces Germany and Russia together, then we totally screwed up, and that's my biggest worry. People asking what combination of the world would really worry you? I say Germany and Russia have a reproach, where you have Russian resources and intellectual capital, and you have Germany's ability to organize and to manufacture.
Interesting. That is an interesting approach.
Yeah, that would be scary. And because, they can produce weaponry as good as the United States could. Can you imagine German manufacturing, 500 of the Su-55 sixth generation fighter? I can, but I can't see Russia doing it. All right, I can see Germany producing 50 of the best German Russian subs. I can't see Russia do it, but Germany can. So I mean, there are some really stupid things that United States does that they think they're too smart by half, and I think that could come back and bite them big time. And I'm just watching that as a potential issue into the future. People always say worry about China. I never worry about China, ever. I worry about Russia and Germany get together, always.
It's interesting you'd say that. I wrote an article back in about 2014, 2015, in which I speculated that one day Germany might leave NATO and join with Russia because Russia controls their home heating oil.
Yeah, and we handed it to them. I mean, we literally handed Germany to Russia by allowing that Nord Stream 2 to go. But at the same time, we were overproducing natural gas, and it killed our natural gas industry. I mean, these things just make me scratch my head. Obviously there's puppet masters pulling the strings. I just don't know. You know, we're not the fly on the wall to understand what they truly think the end game is, because we don't know who's pulling those strings, actually, right? You know, you can only see what you can see. I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's why I think your point is well taken, because Joe is just sitting at his desk and they say, sign here, Joe. And they hope they can get him through a 5-minute press conference and ask him questions about ice cream.
Yeah, look, Joe is happy to be in the room. Always, yep. Right? That's his whole thing, his whole life. He wanted to be president for 40 years, and Joe's in the room. That's all Joe cares about. Joe doesn't care if he's a successful president. It's just Joe Biden made president, you know? And so he'll do and say whatever he needs to say to go along, get along kind of guy, because he has no moral compass, right? He's not Obama had an agenda. Trump had an agenda. Clinton had an agenda. You know, Bush had an agenda. Biden is just happy to be there.
Well, I think the agenda is being carried out in his name, though.
Of course. But he doesn't care. You know, it sounds good to him. You know what I mean? Oh, by the way, hey, we can beat up on the white Christian. Hey, sounds good to me. You know what I mean?
I know.
He can't think back. He can't think through any of the 3D chess on this stuff. He's just happy to push the ball that day. He's the fullback.
Yeah. I'll see your white Christian raise you a domestic terrorist. If you disagree with the election results, DHS has declared you a terrorist. If you disagree with anything to do with government policy on COVID, yet that changes every other day, you're a domestic terrorist. It's absolutely insane the level they've gone to. Now, if you practice religious holidays, I don't know if you saw that or not, you're considered to be a domestic terrorist. I don't know how Christmas is a threat. Well, I guess it's because it's Christian. But it's just amazing to me how far this has gone, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. I know. When I was a kid, I could have never imagined it. Now I wait till tomorrow to see what insanity comes next.
We've got a full dose of sanity. But let's go ahead and make some more sense out of what's going on by comparing ourselves to Venezuela.
Yeah, so it's Venezuela is, has the, I mean, we're obviously a little different because we're the reserve currency, but I always joke America is Zoella, right? So you get to a point where they're just going to, the Democratic Party, you know, wants to produce butter, right? The neocons and Republican side want to produce guns. Well, they made a deal that you can get guns and butter. In the past, in the 70s, right, that became stagflation. This time we're going to get stagflation again, but there's a chance now it can get even more intense because the level of indebtedness is so severe. And so, you know, you in the 70s, you had wages going up with inflation, which, you know, was a different form of inflation. This time we're going to get inflation and people's wages aren't keeping up. And so you're going to get massive poverty. And this is why I call it America's Zoella. Is that, you know, we're basically going to be like Brazil, right? You're going to have these rich enclaves, and then everybody in between is going to be like Escape from New York, you know?
Oh, boy. What an analogy. You're just filled with these graphic analogies today, but Escape from New York, do you think it'll be that bad?
I think it potentially can be, sure. Oh, you know, unless we change direction. Look, I think the American people are already starting to wake up and pushing back. You know, and I talked about this before. Things don't matter to people till they matter to people.
Right.
And now they're starting to matter to people. Even people that don't agree with you politically are saying something's wrong here. This isn't what I signed up for. All I want to do is get rid of Trump. I didn't ask for all this other stuff, you know, and now I got all the other stuff, you know. And look, I mean, look, in Portland, the police said they're not going to intervene between the Proud Boys and Antifa, and they had exchanged gunfire yesterday. So, you know, whether we like it or not, we're going to get a taste of something that may scare enough normal people, into start demanding some changes. So my view personally is in 2024, we're going to elect an adult into the political system. I think there's going to be enough wealthy people in this country saying, okay, enough's enough, you know, enough's enough. And we're going to have to stabilize this ship. So,
yeah. What about the, back to Venezuela? Let me give you a graphic image I had in the beginning of this. When things started to disintegrate in Venezuela, I remember reading the phrase, getting home from the store with groceries, if you could get them, became an adventure in safety.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I always tell people. They said, well, I'm just going to walk around with bags of gold. And I'm like, well, you assume that you're going to be able to get from A to B. So, yeah, look, I've been telling people since I started Trade Genius, I said, if you live in the city, you're an idiot. So, because those people don't care whether or not you're politically for them. You're going to say, you have something, I take something. You know, and I think this COVID thing was kind of a blessing in disguise in that it pushed a lot of people out of the cities that normally wouldn't leave. And that's going to probably save some people's lives because, you know, you look at San Francisco, you look at Portland. I'm talking about the cities themselves, not the areas. Seattle, you know, L.A., I mean, these things are nightmares. And, you know, pretty soon you're going to have truck drivers saying there's no way I'm going into the city because they're going to jack my truck, you know. And then, you know, you have the National Guard handing out food to people, you know. I think it'll come to that in one of these cities that's going to probably wake everybody up. And so, but it has to get bad enough. That's the problem with these things is that politicians don't do anything until it affects their ability to continue to siphon off cash for themselves. When that gravy train ends, then they're going to change direction. And I think that day is coming soon.
That is so well said. And you made me chuckle there because that is so well said. I mean, Congress is allowed to insider trade. So if you don't think Bob was really directly on point there, consider that. Nancy Pelosi has made tens of millions of dollars through insider trading, or should I say more specifically, she's helped her husband be the primary agent in this. And if you and I insider trade on the stock market, we go to prison. Mm. But it's legal for Congress.
Yeah, I mean, they always vote their own rules in. Look, they're mandating vaccines everywhere, but the White House staff is not mandated to take a vaccine.
I know.
All these things just keep coming up.
I know. But, people are looking for consistency of enforcement on these policies, and they're non-existent. I watched a video conference of four medical CEOs moving in the direction of mandating vaccines towards their medical employees, yet none of them wore a face mask in a public meeting. And that's the kind of hypocrisy that people are just saying, how can I take you seriously when you're not following your own dictates? So, no, I hear what you're saying. We don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because I don't want anyone to think we're taking exception to vaccines. We're not. We're taking exceptions to hypocritical politicians. And so, yeah, it's a real problem. But back to Venezuela again. Do you notice that they're trending towards crypto?
Yeah, and I think that's why cryptos have been doing so well is that, you know, cryptos are the only thing that allows you to step off the bus out of the banking system. And, you know, and look, they've tried like crazy to ban it here, there, and everywhere, but it's proving to be a very pesky bug.
Yeah, I agree. And, I agree.
Yeah, and so, you know, we've, you know, at Trade Genius, we've always been You know, when it was pushing down around 30,000, saying, look, there's a 50% retrace. People forget from last June until the high in the spring on Bitcoin was an 800% move, 640% move if you want to be more conservative. And the half pushback was down to 34,000. Ironically, that's when J.P. Morgan came out and said, we think that's fair value. That's when Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs said, we're opening things up to our wealthy clients. And then it pushed down into the high 20s, and everybody, basically, what big money does if they want to get into something, it's called the scare the children move. They push it down, making you look like the world's going to end. They get you to puke up your shares. They pick them up for a deal, and look where it is. Bitcoin is up almost 100% from where the low was. The low was just 4 months ago. 100%. And they told you they were doing it, you know. But if you listen to all the yammerers on social media, they're saying it's going to zero. And the whole time we're telling people, you just keep buying. Just keep buying. And look, we just hit 50, almost 51,000 last night. You know, push up to 52 something. We're going to then get probably a pullback because it needs to 100% move. We'll probably need to pull back some of that move. You know, and maybe into the mid 40s, and then we're going to assault the all-time highs, especially if the Fed does not taper. People are worried. The bank, look, they're $1 trillion reverse repos, Dave. The banks aren't lending, you know, and the loans they have out are right now are at risk because of things we talked about earlier with commercial real estate, with supply chains, with economics, with people going broke, with moratoriums. And so, you know, I wouldn't be buying financial stocks here. I think they're a great risk. And so cryptos is a great way to hedge yourself. I'm a big believer in what's called all of the above, right? You know, remember drill, baby, drill?
Yeah.
Say, well, should I own any crypto? I'm like, yes, you should own some crypto. You don't have to push in all 100%. You don't have to be diamondized any of that garbage. But you should have some of your assets in Bitcoin because just in case. Right, you know, if all of a sudden Bitcoin starts to rip, it's not because the value of anything's getting higher. It's because the value of things that you own are going to collapse. Like, if you own Bitcoin and you're in Venezuela, you didn't feel the pain that the average Venezuelan felt. Same in Turkey when Turkey's lira collapsed. You had Bitcoin, you didn't care. The Bitcoin in your local currency skyrocketed. And that's the thing, you know. So you want to hold some dollar assets, you want to hold energy assets, you want to hold gold and silver miners, you want to own cryptocurrency, you want to own uranium. Those are the things you want to own. You want to own some food plays. That's where your money should be focused, because those things are going to become increasingly important over time. And that's what we're doing at Trade Genius. Those are the things that we are in, and you know, we modulate and monitor depending on you know, is it pushing up too high? Let's take some profit. Push down. Let's get some or add some, and that's how we're going to help us, the little guy, survive and thrive through this nightmare that the Fed's going to cause everybody around the world.
I think it's El Salvador, isn't it, that's putting cryptocurrency or Bitcoin ATMs in their country?
Yep, they are.
I've said this too. I said when that happens in the United States in earnest, that's when, you know, Bitcoin is absolutely permanently entrenched.
Well, look, if you go to any Mexican retail outlet, restaurant, whatever, there's Bitcoin ATM machines all over there, because that's how they get. Remember you talked about how do people get home without getting robbed?
Yeah.
You know, you can walk around with a piece of Bitcoin slip of paper that nobody knows you have, right, that you got from a Bitcoin machine, right, that you can then swap in for dollars at the restaurant or the retail store in local currency, because your remittances are getting across the country. Oh, by the way, if you want to send $10,000 over to Mexico and you don't want the banking system to know about it, well, you go to the place and you buy $10,000 worth of Bitcoin, you send it to your friends, right? That's what you're going to see more and more about. And that's what has those guys really freaked out. They can't control your transactions.
Is that what's behind what they talk about, the single digital currency coming out of the World Economic Forum?
Yeah, look, if they want to shut you up, they just turn off the switch. What happened to Bob and Dave? They weren't complying. What do you mean they aren't complying? Well, we just turned off their banking system, but they can't get access to the currency. So that's another reason why Bitcoin's moving up. People are like, oh no, you don't. I don't want to play in your system.
Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, Dave, what will you do if PayPal decides that you're undesirable? And I said, well, I've kind of divested myself of a lot of PayPal stuff because I don't like people that go after people because of their political beliefs. But I said, even if they did, there's always cryptocurrency. And they said, that'll never work. I don't agree with the answer I got. What do you think?
Well, they're absolutely wrong. And what's happening now is Bitcoin, you don't trade that way because it's kind of like the reserve currency. But there's going to be a number of coins at the lower end of the spectrum that are going to be used just for those transactions. Like for me personally, I've been making a lot of money trading Matic, MATIC, because it moves a little bit like a Ferrari when it moves. And you're going to have people like, there are people like trading Ripple. Ripple's in the United States is a little bit dealing with some SEC stuff, but they use that for cross international trades now outside the U.S. Even in the U.S., you just can't. The U.S. brokers have divested themselves from it. But you're going to find a coin that's going to be linked to Bitcoin that you're going to be able to do your transactions from, and they're going to create an ecosystem outside the dollar at some point that's going to be durable, not more of a hobby. And you're going to see it more and more and more, especially especially as you see things get more and more bizarre, you're going to see more and more people saying, hey, I need to probably hedge myself. And did you see the one that blows you away? Planetaire, PLTR, which is owned by Peter Thiel, the famed libertarian, which is ironic because Planetaire is a deep surveillance state company. CIA is their biggest client. They announced they bought $51 million worth of gold bullion, Dave, and they said to protect us from the black swans coming.
I saw that.
You know what Planetaire does? They're the guys who predict the future. They have predictive algorithms, all right? So if they're thinking black swans are coming, better pay attention. I immediately got some Planetaire, even though I don't like what they do. I said, you know what? They know something I don't know. I'm going to buy some Planetaire.
That's really interesting. Well, okay, what you guys do with Trade Genius, can you tell me a little bit about how these shift in the wind, so to speak, how it affects us? I mean, what are the lessons of China? What are the lessons of Venezuela that are showing up in what you guys do?
Yeah, so we see it. We have our own set of indicators and algorithms that that look at money flow, Dave. So we look from a macro standpoint. We see what sectors money is moving into, and then what stocks within that are the most compelling to buy. And so we've seen these shifts coming for a long time, and we've been acting on those, more and more aggressively as they are rewarding us. And so what we do is we provide, number one, training on how to use this system. It's very straightforward. I mean, these alerts literally say buy and sell. So it's not like you have to have a PhD in Trade Genius. So we'll teach you how to do it. And then the second thing we do, we have chat rooms running 24/7 crypto. And then when the market's open in stock, to be able to ask questions or talk to your peers, it's an open chat room for clients. And then we give you the indicators. So you have access to the indicators of the client. So you can set up your own alerts. You can modify our algorithm, if you will, to look at something. If you want to be a little bit more aggressive or a little bit more conservative, not a problem. You can actually adjust our settings if you want. And then in addition to that, we provide trades every day. So, even though you and I are talking, I put 3 trades out because they're hitting my other computer and giving me alerts. And so, we put you in the right fishing grounds. We'll teach you to fish. We'll throw you some fish. And then that way you start understanding how this stuff all works, and then you make the trades. I always say I really don't care what happens. I mean, I do care from a moral sense, but I don't care from a financial sense because I'm just following the money. And I don't have to be in front of the money. I just have to be in what they call the middle 60, catch the move, and be happy. And that's what we do. And then, Dave, we put together specials for your listeners, as we always do. We bundle 7 bundles. We have crypto, we have stocks, we trade futures in a VIP room. And then we also have, which are 65% off pre-bundled. It's an incredible deal. And then 40% promo code SCHOOL if you just want to pick and choose something that's just in the store. And that's not pre-discounted, so you take 40% off the retail price of anything not bundled. Take advantage of it by the 28th of August to get the deal. And I think you'll like trading with us.
Yeah, it's such a great, well, I'm trying to find the words to say it. You're like, you remind me of this football coach. I'll share this with you. God, his name jumped out of my head, but he was at the Pulaski Academy in Arkansas, and he's won like 7 of the last 9 state titles, and he's moved on to a college job this year. But this guy never punts on fourth down. I don't care if he has the ball on his own 1 yard line. He does not punt. He says the metrics favor doing it this way. He onside kicks, unless he's in a blowout where he's winning by more than 3 touchdowns. He onside kicks after every score to try to increase the number of possessions. Well, these fly in the face of convention. He goes for a 2-point conversion almost every time. He flies in the face of convention, but he says, I'm just following the metrics. And it reminds me of what I used to teach research students to do. Don't judge your research, just follow the data. That's kind of what you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest mistake I make as a trader when I don't follow my own advice. You know, if I throw my own personal bias against what the data is telling me, it'll go against me. The data's right. Look, this is a game of probabilities. You know, we're right 2 out of every 3 times, and when we're right more money than when we're wrong, we lose money. So over time, you can't help but make money. You just have to trust the system and just keep the next trade, just be like a quarterback. You throw an interception, you forget it, you move on. You throw a touchdown, you forget it, you just move on. And you just run with the probabilities. I've been doing this thing for a long time. My probabilities, my winning percentage has stayed remarkably consistent.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's 65%. It's anywhere between 64 and 66. It never really varies.
So you're winning 2 out of 3 trades.
Yeah, winning 2 out of 3 trades. And I'm happy with that. So
No kidding.
You make less money. If you try to win less than that, you have to rely on bigger wins. I'm basically Ohio State in the 70s. I'm Woody Hayes. You know, three plays in a cloud of dust, right? Next first down. And you just keep trading that way and you're going to make money. Especially now that there's no commission costs. So you don't have to swing for home runs. We're first and second base. Occasionally you get a home run. But that's not how the algos work anymore. They don't let you just run forever, okay? You get these massive pullbacks, even in something that's going to the moon, and usually catches retail off guard. So you take your profit. We call it rinse and repeat.
Wow, that's it's amazing here. So the rate of return, have you ever calculated what that is for your all investors, or is that too complicated to follow?
No, I have it right here. I'm looking at it. So in the last 19 months. I reset this again in 2020 in January, and so we asked people to consider 381 trades. We won 247 of those trades, 64.83% win rate. We're in the trade an average of 3 days. We gained 1.93% average gain across winners and losers, and which comes out to an annualized of 200.24%.
What? Whoa. I want to make sure I heard this right, okay? Because I was not asleep at the wheel, I promise. You're saying that the rate of return over the last 18 months for Trade Genius investors, the aggregate is over 200%?
No, those are the trades, Dave. So I don't know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What percentage of their portfolio they're applying to a certain trade, or how much percentage of the portfolio they are applying. You're never 100%. All I can control is the win rate and the percentage of each individual trade. How people manage their portfolio is not, I can't know that.
Yeah, so. That's why I was asking if that was too complex to measure, and it sounds like
No,
it is.
Well, it's only too complex because I don't know anybody's different matrix. But you're definitely going to do, you know, you're definitely going to do better than the market average is. So.
Well, yeah, if you're 1 in 2 out of 3, that's for sure. Would you agree with this one? We're out of time. I can't stop asking good questions at the close of a show. Bob, we've got your data. School is the code word, and also to the offer expires this Saturday. But hey, thanks for coming on. This was really informative.
Yeah, you're welcome. TradeLegacyGenius.com, folks. Check us out, and then I'm sure we'll talk in a couple weeks, Dave.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.